This is the recording of questions and answers and comments for the food intolerance, for the elimination diet part of the food principles module. So hands up, chat. Was this helpful? I mean, I know a lot of this, a lot of you know a lot of this stuff, but sometimes, you know, I go into a little bit more detail and a little bit more clinical relevance to help you with it. Let's see. So you guys, when I left, you guys were hearing elevator music, huh? Interesting. And it said the moderator has left the conference. Too bad I don't have timestamps. I'll be able to find it. So Tony says, as a child, I was told by the allergist to eliminate colored foods like orange and red. Well, yeah, red dye number 3 and orange dye, that would be good. If it was like a Feingold diet, they take them off of all those colorings. But you mean like the real foods? Wow, holy cow. All right, Brenda, everybody's saying, applauding, you're amazing. Thank you. Brenda, food principles. You know, the food principles module, let's check into that, Lynn, because even though it's later, maybe that you're just not up to that module yet, it was supposed to have been opened for everyone because we were doing it live. So let's make a note of that, Lynn, and we can make sure that it's opened for everybody that's in so far. And then after, once it's finished and it's up, it'll just be like part of the regular thing. And I think we only have one, possibly two more of these to finish up. Food religions, food principles module, it took on a life of its own. You know, I had envisioned this 2-3-4 hour presentation, several sections, talking about all the different kinds of food diets and all. And I think we're up to like 12 or 14 of them now, and hours and hours. So I just really have it. So, Brenda, I have a question about the Cyrex test. Yay, say. So, yep, Tony said, my mom just gave up and put me on meds. Lovely. You're not the thing. Just type your question here, Brenda, if you're not on the phone. Poor Tony. A lot of us were. I wasn't put on meds, but. So Brenda put it in the question. I see. I did a Cyrex panel for multiple tissue antibodies, which included foods. Does this mean I have antibodies to these foods forever? No. No, they're actually not. They're usually transient. Now, what you would do would be look at the genetics, right? There's certain things that show in your genetics, like, oh, you have a tendency towards that particular thing. And we have a bunch of that at our last Cheyenne. We had a whole big, several slides on that talked about some of those foods. But no, it doesn't mean forever. You've got to clean it up. There may be some that you have forever, but you got to clean up your gut. Get it going. Let's see. Okay. Raise your hands. I want to talk to people. Okay. So Laura. Wait. Let's go. Yeah. Laura and then Lynn and Eva. So Laura.
Hi, Dr. Emily.
Hi.
This was so helpful. Thank you so much. And something that I thought was interesting. So you really recommend that people don't do a provocation test with gluten until 6 months. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, if they insist on it, of course you go with them. But the problem is you just run the risk of their conditions, their imbalances lasting so much longer. Because every time you provoke it, every time you get exposed to it, it could be 6 months before it's completely cleaned out.
Because I do 30-day elimination diets with my clients, and that's like the first thing that everybody wants to add back. Typically,
of course,
is the gluten. And for a lot of them, they notice a direct correlation, and it's enough to actually, it kind of works in my favor to keep them off.
Thank you.
They were like, oh my gosh.
Keep doing it. Yep, keep doing it. If that's,
yeah.
If it works, because, you know, they're going to have a setback. They're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
but
do
I
it.
Do have a few that are like, oh, I added it back in and I'm fine. And then I'm kind of like, oh, but it's not a good food to be eating. So.
Right. And if they're fine, does that mean that all the symptoms that they came to you for help with are gone?
No.
Okay. Good. They just don't notice the difference because it's not enough of an addition to the bucket. but it's going to prevent them from getting better. So that's why I said wait for 6 months, except in this provocation where they're going to, you know, maybe they'll get a provoke, but they don't always. It doesn't always work in your favor. But also make sure that when they add it, they're adding it deliberately. They're not just having a little bit of bread there, a little bit of there. That's going to be the insidious buildup of symptoms if they do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they go in that first day, they have waffles for breakfast and sandwich for lunch and then pasta for dinner, and they do that for 3 days, if they're sensitive, they're most likely going to have an issue. Now, but you have to also be make them aware of where the symptoms are going to come. They're going, my gut is fine. I'm fine. I don't have joint pain. How's your energy? That's why having that symptom list, so they're rating it. What's your energy like? How's your mood? How's your sex drive? How's your focus? How's your sleep? Like all those little things. And most people don't pay attention to that, right? They're just out of touch with their bodies. Their bodies are on autopilot.
Yeah.
Notice the obvious pains, but most people don't notice. Like I said, when I went back, I was off of something that I was allergic to, and something happened, and I had been off of it, and I didn't notice a symptom until it came back. And it was like, I think it was a kind of a brain fog off that. I mean, this is 30 years ago, so I don't remember exactly. But I remember thinking, oh, my God, this is how I used to feel every day. I don't want to feel like this anymore. And I went right back to the good diet. Yeah. It's tricky. I mean, there's no black or white here, obviously, right? There's no perfect test. There's no perfect elimination. It's always negotiations with your clients, but you really want to be able to
tell
them why, right? That the symptoms can be insidious. And suddenly you're like not sleeping well. You know, it might be a month after you add it back and they're, you know, starting to develop pains again, or they're having some irritability and they're snapping at their partner and they can't focus at work. Can be very insidious. That's why this stuff goes on undiagnosed for so long.
Yeah. The other thing that you said that was so profound to me is that you do not work with those people who are not open to taking gluten, you know, some of these foods out. And that was so profound to me because I have a client right now with chronic pelvic pain, and she kind of, you know, she'll pull gluten out for a couple days or dairy out for a couple days, but it's not something that she's been consistent with. And she keeps saying, I'm trying. And so I'll pull in my coaching skills with that to try to figure out and help her with that. But at the core of it, she said, I really don't believe that nutrition is going to impact my pain. And so I'm trying to kind of coach around that piece.
Yeah. It's a tough piece because you're going to get a lot of them. And you know, first you take on everybody, but you know what? I want to be successful.
Yeah.
I want the people that I'm working with to actually do it. And if they outright say to me, no, I'm not willing, if they say, I'll try, then we do the coaching thing. Like try doesn't mean anything, right? Try means you're going to not do it, and you're going to be able to say, well, I tried. That's what really try means, right? So that's what coaching comes in. But if they outright say, no, I'm not willing to do it, then I say, you know, that's really great. I really respect that. And, you know, I'd like to refer you to somebody else because I don't think I can help you. That's all.
That's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes if you do that, if they really like you and they built up a rapport, they go, wait. You know, they're trying to get away with it. They're like little kids, right? They can try to get away with whatever they can. So if you stay powerful and you go, look, nutrition is a core. If you can do this, then we can make progress here. But if you can't do this, there's no way I won't work with you, because it's not one. I don't have a magic wand in my toolbox. I'm sorry, I have one, but it's a toy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
right.
That's really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, because you set yourself and them up for disappointment. Because we care, we want them to help, and then, you know, if you're like anybody else who's a practitioner, you feel like, you take it on yourself. Oh, they didn't get better. It must be something I did. What did I do wrong? Right? It's not what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have a poster that's it fell down off my wall. It just looked to see, but it's usually on my wall. And it's this cat laying, you know, on the couch with the box of pizza, the remote in one hand, the beer in the other. And he's just laying there exhausted. And it says, there's nothing the doctor can do that will undo what the patient will not. Well, that will overcome what the patient will not. And it was from the original health coach. We all talk about health coach now. Health coach was not a term back in, you know, the 80s when I first started doing this. But about almost a year, maybe a year and a half, 2 years after I graduated, I was starting my practice. I had this vision of what I was going to do. It was way different than what anybody else was doing out there. And I got this mailer that talked about, come to this weekend, about health coach, the future of medicine, and blah, blah, blah. And I went there, and it was like, it was amazing. It was the kind of stuff we're doing now. It was kind of an online program, but it wasn't really online because there was no internet, but it was, they'd send you discs and CDs, and you'd get on phone calls and then do retreats. And it was all about how to transition to this model. And I don't know, Mark Percival, he should have coined it. He should have made $1 million on it. Maybe he is. Maybe he's retired on the beach somewhere. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Wonderful, sweet guy from Canada. But now everybody's using Health Coach. And I wish he would have trademarked it because he really came up with it. That was the first that we did it. And that's what I did for 2 years. I went to all his seminars and really got like a lot of the clinical skills that he was doing. He was so far ahead of his time, right? But his poster was from him. It was something that he had all these great tools, all these great handouts. Now, the problem was it wasn't handouts like I give you where you can edit them to put your own stuff on it and put your own slant in it. And I would be like, I don't agree with that paragraph. And how do I do this? I can't give it to somebody because I don't agree with that paragraph. But it was way before his time. But that's one of his posters. He had, that was his cat, his trademark cat. I have this little booklet. He called it The Health Coach Presents. He did have it trademarked. How did I hire people? Interesting. Maybe he didn't win the trademark. But he has this thing called Teaming Up for a Healthier You, and there's these cats and these dogs and all these beliefs and limiting beliefs, nutritional burdens, and he has this really cool little poem called The Dangerous Cliff, and it goes on and on and on, but about all these people that were falling down off this cliff. They would drive too fast. They wouldn't stop. It was raining. They'd fall off the cliff. And then they have to be rushed to the hospital. So somebody brilliant said they had a great idea for solving this problem. Let's build a hospital at the bottom of the cliff. And it was like, excuse me? Why don't we just put a wall at the top of the cliff and prevent people from going over? And that's kind of how people treat their health and their bodies and how Western medicine looks at it in some regards, right? Let's just do this. Well, let's just keep them from hit themselves over the head with the hammer. So,
wow.
Anyway.
Well, very powerful. What powerful quotes and what a powerful image.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, so we've got Lynn and then Eva. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I just had something really quick. So I had brought somebody through, they were already gluten-free, dairy-free, low glycemic, no eggs, all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. And so what we were doing, and she had already done a leaky gut, so what we were doing is basically mono meals. And it's like each day she would try a different food because she was also, you know, low FODMAPs, no nightshades, nothing. I mean, it was like very limiting. And she was doing this for a while. So in order to entice her that not everything in all of those food headings might be bad for her, we were doing these basically mono meal days. And so like one day might be kale. And she would do kale in different forms, whether it was like massage kale salad or steamed or in smoothies, just to see how she did. And she was really surprised at the results she was getting. Foods that she had been avoiding, like they were the plague, actually were healing her. So I just wanted to, first of all, because I was kind of going by intuition at that point, and I just wanted to make sure that that's an okay place to bring somebody as part of elimination diet.
It's kind of like a severe reintroduction phase.
Right.
And mono meals, just really, a lot of this is the gut, right? The gut is so inflamed and it's so irritated and has so much work to do.
It's overwhelmed.
It's overwhelmed. So you just give it one thing at a time. And how many people are taking like handful and handful of supplements, and they're making these meals and they're making these smoothies and they're putting every powder and potion in there. And they're wondering why they're not getting better. And I think that that simplification, which is why I think for a lot of people, fasting works so well. For me, I loved it because it just let my body go to nothing. And then when I introduce foods, I introduce them one or two at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
And not everybody can fast, but that mono meal is as close as you're going to get to fasting, which is really cool.
Right. And it kind of complements what you were saying about what works for them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wanted to make sure that that was okay. And then the other thing is, and I know we've spoken about it briefly, and I am working with them, so hopefully soon we'll be able to order from them. But it's this company is called Vibrant Wellness. They're the ones who have the gut zoomer that Dr. Tom O'Brien was raving over recently. They also have a food sensitivity testing. Anyway, so what they have is, I'll just read a little snippet here. It says, Vibrant is the only company that utilizes a chemiluminescent method of detecting food sensitivities on a silicon chip. While other labs use ELISA methods, our proprietary technology enables us to provide the highest sensitivity of detection. All 96 tests are performed in a single reaction vessel, enabling the best accuracy and precision. They test for IgG and IgA antibodies to food. Anyway, so I just...
Worth looking at, here's my story with and why I'm so jaded about these tests. When I first got out of school, I got my practice going, and I'm working with people, and I was running food sensitivities on them. And I would run these food sensitivities, and, of course, everybody had 25 foods, and we went through this stuff, and we went through that stuff, and then they'd run them again, and all the foods that they originally tested for weren't there, but then the ones that they did test, that they started eating more of, were there, and, you know, it just got to the point where I just felt like it was overwhelmed, and I stopped doing it. And people would get discouraged because, you know, even if we were working on the leaky gut, we'd still end up with that because it takes time for the leaky gut to repair, right? So it was frustrating for people. It was frustrating for me. And then a couple of my colleagues decided to do a split testing of blood samples. So they draw blood on a single person. They split it into two. They label one Mary Smith and one John Doe, and they'd send it off to the lab, the same lab, and get different results. Then they tried the same test to do different labs, same blood, get different results. And so we all just got like, this is ridiculous. Why are we doing this? Why are we wasting people's money and our time? So, and I'm sure things have changed technologically maybe, but I haven't done that recently, and maybe we should try that again with to do the double blinds like that.
Well, I tend to agree with you, especially since then people see this and they're like, that they think that then that means forever.
They think it means forever, exactly. Exactly.
And so, but it can at the same time, like with the person who was like, well, I don't think nutrition really has anything to do with it. Possibly if they see something like this in black and white, it might make a difference.
Maybe, but then they go on the internet and they start reading and researching what is the validity of this testing, and they see so much mixed information about it that it loses credibility there too. So, you know, it's making sound judgment. I've had situations where I've had to talk to, say, the parents of somebody that I was working with, a fully grown adult, but the parents wanted to talk to her. And hearing the attitudes that were so Western medicine and so skeptical of everything we were doing was, it's there. It's out there. You know, people have these limiting beliefs and they carry them. And for us, it's just a matter of touching the people in a way that they're willing to listen and to listen to logic and reason. A lot of times, I always go back to the, what do you feed your car? What do you feed your dog? You know, did you feed your dog jelly beans just because they're asking? Some people do, you know, some people feed their dogs stuff that's not intended for them, but the dogs are getting sick. But you wouldn't give your car, cars are a real good thing to to look at it. What kind of fuel requirements does a car have? Okay, you give it to it. You don't ask questions. You go, oh, it's bored. Maybe today I'll give it jelly beans instead. I wonder if Crisco would work instead of motor oil. You just give it what it's supposed to have. And that's really a matter of figuring out what works best for you to fuel you best and just sticking with it and making sense of it. Just my soapbox again. But thank you for that. I really like the idea of the mono. What you reminded me, too, is another way that I did, and I just kind of glossed over it, was the pulse testing. It's on the chart of what things you check. But Dr. Coco, Imogene Coco or something like that, wrote a book, and it was basically
–
Coca.
And we were doing that too, and because we were using many of these same forms and so forth with the suspicious foods and whatever, and those are great. I highly, highly recommend using that with your clients. It just helps tremendously with them. But the other piece to that, though, is then somebody can get so wound up in all the different testings.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has you doing, you just put it on your tongue, and
yeah,
then it goes up. I think it's 4 points, something like that.
10, it's usually 10, I think. I'd have to look back at the book.
No, ours is 10.
Yeah, so you look
ours
at...
Ours is 10 points. His was 4 points.
Coca?
Yeah.
I was 4 points. So
yeah,
that's what I was taught. But it was 10. If you're basically looking to see, and his is that's more sensitive. A lot of things can raise your pulse 4 points, right? Even just an inaccuracy in the way you're measuring can measure raise. If it's 10, you basically measure the pulse before eating. You eat it and you measure it after. You have to do it right there in proximity. You want it to be right before and then right after, because you don't want to go run around the block or chase your kid around the kitchen or, you know, anything that's going to raise your pulse. So it's just sit down at the meal, take your pulse, you eat the food, and then you take your pulse, and you can continue to take it for the next, I don't know if he says 15 minutes or an hour. I've got to look back at the specifics. I've got it written up somewhere. We have it in our meal.
Right. The only reason I remember it is because we went over it so well together just like within the last week, and you know, the whole point of it, though, because if you're testing to see how foods do, like you said, you take all the other measures into consideration. You know, were you just exercising? What was your stress level?
Mm-hmm.
But there's the glucose. You know, what's your blood sugar? But they're all tools.
So
what it really comes down to is, how are you feeling? And you can spend all that time and just really overthink it. And then you just become so fixated on the perfect foods.
Yep.
Right? And that's the part, at least with her, that I was trying to get to, is that there is no perfect food. There is no perfect diet. There's the one that's supporting our body right now.
The you diet. My next book is going to be called The You Diet. So that's a good point. And they get overstressed out, and then they're raising their blood sugar because they're creating cortisol response because they're so stressed out. They don't know what to eat. They're scared of eating. So it's really working with people, you know, just taking them by the hand and letting them relax about food. And, you know, it doesn't mean eat, you know, pancakes for every meal because you let them relax. It means just let them relax and let them enjoy. It's really important. So let me get to Eva so we don't run out of time. Thank you very much, Lynn.
I'm Dr. Rita Marie. Sorry.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for a great presentation. I have two questions for you. One is, I just had a client that came with a test already from another practitioner, actually a clinic that she did, and it was the Array 10 from Cyrex Labs. And I know her for a long time now, and I know she has candida, and she has reacted to everything except 19 foods tested out of 90.
Mm.
So I know she has leaky gut issues.
Uh-huh.
How would you approach something like this would you just take her off of everything she's reacting to at this moment? and just start working with the foods that she can tolerate and work on her candida and her leaky gut situation?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and you need to play this out. So if 19 out of 90, so she's still got 70 foods that she can eat, 71 technically.
She did not react to 19. She reacted to everything else.
Oh, everything but 19. So she's
yes.
down to 19. Okay,
yes.
Got it. Okay, so this is a situation where, first of all, you look at the columns, right? Is it, you know, the moderate, mild, severe?
Mm-hmm.
If they're severe, you definitely want her off of them at least for a week or two or a month while you're working on the leaky gut to help her so it doesn't constantly attack it. So it's like a modified fast where she's allowed to eat these 19 foods, right? Mm-hmm. Remember we said come up with the rare foods diet? You know, that's the kind of thing where you come up with a few foods a day, you rotate them around, enough
right.
food to rotate. To be able to get, you got to make sure it's enough foods and enough variety to be able to get stuff. If you need to have her do foods that are not in that list, then you go with the lowest one. But you've got to get working on that gut and the candida right away. I like to put people on a few days of a, if they will do it, of a liquid only. And that can be smoothies of the foods that they can eat. That could be protein powders blended up. It could be a nut butter, you know, milk kind of thing, but just smooth, just really nice and soothing for the gut. So they're on liquid only for 3 days.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems that I'm having is because everything she hasn't reacted to is very high glycemic and what feeds candida. So it would be like rice and different types of starches, basically, because she was avoiding those. But so she didn't react to him. So I don't know if.
Okay. Yeah. So, but you might. Boy, that's why doing the test, it's almost like it's a burden to do the test. So I would look at what are there low glycemic foods in her low sensitivity, or are they all high sensitivity?
Pretty much high glycemic foods are left. There is peanut butter that is left and sesame oil and broccoli that she's not reacting to.
Yeah, so you're going to have to find a diet for her to be able to look at. You're going to have to look at the lowest ones there and have to do a four-day rotation on them.
Okay.
So whatever's in the low one, you do a four-day rotation. The low glycemic ones that are not there. You don't want to give her the high glycemic ones because it's going to just propagate the problem. And then you rotate those every 4 days while you're healing the gut, while you're working on the candida.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, I would say, you know, make sure she's off of the others for a month or so. Then you start to gradually reintroduce them.
Okay.
Yes.
And my second question is the guy that I'm working with that lives in Italy, he showed food allergies or sensitivities on the blood work. So he wanted to do a food sensitivity. So we used a Alkaline test for him for 200 foods. He only reacted to three in severe, which was macadamia nut, sesame, and white potato. But
right.
he did have a mild gliadin, no reaction to gluten. So he has some, I mean, nothing major when you look at just typical gluten or gliadin reactivity. He has some anxiety and some fear of flying. But other than that, he definitely has some cardiovascular and insulin resistance, which is part of all of it. Would you have somebody like that stay away from the gluten for 6 months and then occasionally
minimum.
Do a rotation
Absolutely.
Of the gluten?
Would I would get off of them for 6 months, totally. And if he's got any of those issues, unless those issues have gone away, you stay away from those until he could be developing antibodies to his myocardium. He could be developing
right.
antibodies to any part of his body, his brain. So those tests are not very accurate for gluten, especially if he's been on a low-gluten or gluten-free diet. So I wouldn't trust it.
Yeah, he actually has been eating gluten. He's never stopped eating gluten. He's Italian, so that's a very common food for him. And he's been doing amazingly well in the last 3 weeks just going through your sweet spot solution because we look at all the green.
Right? If he's not off gluten, he's not really doing sweet spot fully.
Right. He is not off of gluten, but this is going to help me show yep. him that this is necessity for him. I just didn't know because I'm gluten-free. My family's gluten-free. My brother has rheumatoid arthritis and is gluten-free and made a huge improvement in the last 2 years back to work from being completely invalid. And my daughter has an autoimmune and she was never going to be able to read and write. And today she graduated from junior high in Westlake with straight A's. So I believe if you stick with it, it definitely works.
You know, another thing I'll throw in here that is another tool that you can use when people are kind of skeptic. They don't. It's like, great, keep eating it right now. Let's just do the antibody test.
Okay.
Day 5. She's going to do it, because that's what I would do. Because say otherwise, I need you to get off of this for 6 months. And if this shows up that there's no antibodies, then I could say get off of it for some length of time until your symptoms are clear, and then you can try it again. Very slowly. But I'd also check for the genetic markers.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I'd check the genetic markers for celiac and the array 5 for all the antibodies.
Okay, because I feel like I put a little bit too much emphasis on just completely staying off of gluten permanently. Because I think once your computer registers a reaction, I think anytime you have
I personally agree with you. And like I said, my thing about reintroducing gluten is all their symptoms are gone. They're feeling great all the time. They have great energy. Nothing's wrong. And then they want to check it out.
Okay.
Right?
Yes. Yes. And my final question is, let's say with this ALKET or any other test that you're going to be testing that it's showing the reactivity right at this moment and you take those foods out and then you start reacting to the foods that you incorporated. Is this a prediction of a leaky gut situation because now you're reacting to another food that you have on a regular basis, or is it because you weren't rotating the food? What is the...
Yeah, it's probably leaky gut and lack of rotation, but this guy, if he only showed up with 3, it's probably not leaky gut. It's probably, you know, he's developed sensitivities to those particular things for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It could be a chemical imbalance between him and the food. They just don't react and the body reacts to it. You don't know. Cyrex is not an antibody antigen reaction. I mean,
correct.
You did Cyrex. Never mind. It is.
Which is a different thing.
ALKET is not. It's just the sites are responding to it for whatever reason they don't like it.
Yeah.
So in his case, it's not the gut isn't really. I mean, it's always going to be helpful to do gut, but his is not like, oh my God, this guy's got a gut like the other one with the 89 foods.
Yeah. Right? She keeps crying and upset and didn't know what to do and how, you know, I had to just calm this lady down because she was so upset. So, you know, it's a different situation between the two people.
Totally.
Different issues, but yeah. Okay, Dr. Rita Marie, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good work. Anybody else have questions or comments? Let me go check to see. Most of people are dropping off because it's getting late and I do need to go because I have another call coming up. But great discussion. Go to my next call. Nick, great appreciate you go now. Everybody's saying that. So thank you guys. Well, you know, Lynn just mentions this, and I'll say that last thing and go. Elaine said, so sad when someone won't do what they need to do, and it is. And Lynn says it speaks to a deeper thing that needs to be addressed, that feeling of self-worth, that not being good enough. And face it, you know, we may not be psychology professors, but what we're going to have to do with a lot of people is work with that or get them to work with somebody, because a lot of this comes from the deserving and all. So. Thank you guys for being here. I'll open up your lines. Let me stop the recording. Open up your lines and we can say goodbye to each other. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.